Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. I'm your host, Richard Schumacher. I'm the Director of Programs and Services for LSEM. And today we are honored to once again have returned to the podcast Dr. Rebecca Schmidt, or Becky as we all call her. She's the Director of LCMS School Ministry down in St. Louis and does a fantastic job of just overseeing all of the different schools, early childhood centers, and ministries of the educational wing of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So, Becky, thank you for taking the time to join us on the podcast again today.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here today.
And typically on a day like today, you would be working from the office or traveling out to a school somewhere, being very involved in the different things that our schools are doing. But kind of a different vibe this year, a little different pace. How's it been for you in terms of just managing your schedule and trying to do the things that you do, but to do so with the COVID restrictions?
Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to my fabulous team, Kristen Freeman, Matthew Burkholt. We are the trio that serve in school ministry, and we could not be able to serve schools to the best of our ability without either one. They have been an amazing support, always in the past, but in particular with this past year of COVID. You know, it was just 1 year ago to in March, just over a year, when we stepped out of our offices with laptops under our arms for a 2 week hiatus. And I have not been back physically to the office except for two times for a total of 1 hour and 5 minutes. Wow. Matt, Chris, and I have been working deployed ever since then. And so, not unlike schools, schools face the same thing. How long will this last? Will it be temporary? And we also had to pivot and really look at how we can continue to serve schools remotely. And that's what we've done. So I am happy to report that we're starting to phase back in, and this will happen after Easter, but it will be a long time before we're back at 100%.
And now for those folks listening who may not know Matt or Kristen, just talk a little bit about their roles and what they provide to the team there at the school ministry.
Well, Matthew Burkholt is our manager of online support and services, and this has been a huge blessing in our office as we examined every piece of ministry that we have and reinterpreted it in a virtual approach. And so from NLSA, our National Lutheran School Accreditation, and what that means for national meetings in terms of virtual validation team reports, all things related to technology were very critical and very important. We had a lot of writing of manuals and guidance for NLSA, and Matt was very helpful with this part to explain how the virtual aspect of these visits occurred, what platforms were needed, and provided very important guidance for schools and for districts who were who had need of conducting a virtual visit. And in addition to that, every bit of conversation similar to ours today had to be virtual. So through Zoom, which is probably my favorite because it feels the most like being in person, but pre-recording greetings and celebration messages and narrating reports for our constituents all became a part of this. In addition to that, managing all the print resources that still go on and coordinating all of those. So it's an all hands on deck. Kristen is really our face and voice of our office. She is the first friendly voice that when someone calls our office for a question, particularly with NLSA and all the many nuances of being in serving in a COVID year, she really is the glue that keeps track of all of the details that are needed, from virtual validation teams to in-person validation teams to extension years and accurate record keeping. And all of this is very, very critical. So we worked very carefully as a team to ensure that records were up to date, that schools received the support that they need, that accreditation continues, and that resources are also readily available.
And really, it is astonishing when you think about all of the different things that your office will provide to schools across Synod, and all of the different things that are still needed. I mean, schools who have been planning accreditation visits obviously had to delay them for a time, but they're happening. And resources and materials, you know, National Lutheran Schools Week materials, you know, we were able to celebrate those this year, albeit everything had a different look and feel to it in one way or another. Very little of what we did was identical to, say, 2019, 18, and so on. But it really speaks to, I think, the vision, the planning, and the efforts of so many people within Lutheran schools, from the support staff who were disinfecting everything in buildings right on up to your office. It's really a testament to these educators to be committed to providing the most effective education possible to our students in the safest way possible in the face of this pandemic. So again, I'm just amazed at the different things that had to go into making this year go as successfully as it did, with so few things, really, when you think about it, that had to be completely canceled or put off.
I think that's been one of the biggest challenges, Rich, and you would be familiar in LSEM of scenario planning. And it's one thing to plan it once, it's another to plan it twice, but to constantly reassess and develop a virtual when possible, often a postponement when a virtual just isn't going to accomplish the goals of building communities. So we're looking forward to a time when we can plan it and it stays on the calendar and it happens and occurs. So we're looking forward to that. We're beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel in our office. And I think some are, from what I'm hearing from schools, much of this is occurring for them too, as they're looking through being open for nearly a year now at quarter three.
And again, hopefully that 2-week period that we were told was going to be the delay does come to an end at some point. It's certainly been the longest 2 weeks of all of our lives. But it's been an ever-changing circumstance. And again, it just amazes me how well we've adapted to those changes. Again, like you said, it's one thing to plan once. It's one thing to plan twice. It's one thing to plan even a third time. But when day-to-day things change to the plans that have to be made, you know, it's been so fluid, just been remarkable, the work that's done. So I know many thanks go out to many, many people who have done great work this year, yourself included, and all those folks listening in on this podcast today. So in terms of COVID, what are some of the things that you've seen, you've heard, maybe some different ways that schools have responded to the pandemic that really stand out to you as perhaps being effective or in some way worth noting here as we wrap up this very interesting school year?
Absolutely. Well, when we look back to last fall, over 93% of our schools ended in-person classes last spring. Less than 4% of those schools opened classrooms before the end of the 2021 school year. And then facing that summer of scenario planning and can we open and daily guidance changes, really tested the strength of our schools. And it's been amazing to see how they have continued to adapt with always that mission of continuing to serve children and families. And that seems to be the greatest strength of our schools. It was never a part of, well, we can't open or this won't work. It's how do we make it work? Right. And so time and time again, we've seen school teams coming together and saying, I can do this, and this is, we can make this work. And then the willingness to reassess and adapt. So that's been a huge blessing. So when we look at those numbers where less than 4% reopened at the end of 2021, by contrast, 82% of our schools resumed in the fall with in-person classes. And then the remaining 18% offered remote learning or a hybrid. So there were lots of different strategies. I think a great strength too with listservs that are available and working within districts and being connected within districts. There was a lot of sharing of ideas, certainly on LuthEd. And that was very encouraging to see that there was no silly question. And when it was posted, there were many, many ideas of support and prayer for each other, which was really a nationwide experience. And that is very positive. And so recognizing the importance of gathering together, praying for each other, finding out about best practices, and then to move ahead, even if it's not a perfect plan, to fail forward. And this is what we've seen over and over again.
We're talking with Dr. Becky Schmidt, the director of LCMS School Ministries, here on the podcast today, and talking about, again, the impacts that COVID has had on our schools. Now, in my travels and in connections with schools around the country, it's been interesting to me how the pandemic and the circumstances on how public schools have adapted to the restrictions. In some cases, they've stayed open. In some cases, they only offered remote or virtual learning options. So it put families in a position, in many cases, where they had to make some choices about where they were going to send their students to school this year. Some of our schools, we've seen some enrollment drops. In many of our schools, we've seen some pretty robust increases. And the early reports from principals that I've been talking to are a lot of those students who came this past year are going to be retained at a pretty good percentage. So what are you hearing? What are you seeing along those lines too? Is this an opportunity that God has presented to us, albeit in a very strange way, to really market ourselves out of a necessity, but then demonstrate the excellence that our schools have to families who might have not otherwise given us a look?
You know, it really is an important issue because it goes back to our DNA, and the purpose that we serve is to seek and save the lost, to share the gospel message daily with children and families that all might have the promise of eternal life. And so this also becomes a part of that. If our mission is to do this, then we have this opportunity. And really, we've been preparing for several years for this with the increased number of families who are not Lutheran or from the community and serving in our schools, also attending our schools. And so our intentional caring for families in a Christ-centered Christian curriculum is critical, and that we know how to do. And so this is what we'll continue to do well.
It'll be curious to see how the numbers play out next year when the statistical reports come out, for a couple of reasons. One, I know this year the number of schools, the percentage of schools that completed the paperwork is down from what it's been in years past. Understandably, a lot of administrators had a lot of other things going on, so I can understand why some of those reports may not have gotten in. But also, again, just the simple fact that as a result of the pandemic, we've seen an influx of students in many of our schools, and those schools are growing, and they're needing to expand what they're doing to be able to accommodate the needs, and doing so remarkably well during the middle of a worldwide pandemic. It's actually quite inspiring to see. So in terms of the statistics, in terms of the enrollment, I mean, again, you know, it's hard to guess what's going to happen or even project it based on all the different factors that are against us. But where do you see us heading in that regard? Do you see Lutheran schools perhaps being able to tick up in numbers for this upcoming year as we see more reporting and we see more students, families choosing our schools?
You know, I think that it's going to be in pockets. We're going to have schools that are increasing and we're going to have schools that are decreasing. So the schools that, and so it's going to be area by area in that regard. With our 30% who did not return data, which we only report what was reported to us, that will be where we follow up for next year.
That sounds like the perfect answer from somebody who doesn't want this podcast to be played a year from now and have a projection used against her, which I totally get. You know,
we've been sensitive to our schools during COVID. When you're on your last nerve and really working hard to support a staff who has been working around the clock, learning skills that probably had a foundation but did not enter nearly into use to the depth that it did this last year. We really had to support them in many ways. So we did the best we could. We knew that we're just going to have to watch this year and note those changes. Interestingly, we had a new category in our reporting this year, and that was called on hiatus. So we had about 32 schools that reported that they were suspending operation for a year to return this fall. And that's a new piece. So we'll be circling back to those schools to see how this year went in terms of the suspended service and how they're going to be working this coming year. And that also brings up that some are 85% of those schools were early childhood programs. And so these were the hardest hit of our schools with COVID.
And again, speaking of the early childhood programs in the preschools, you know, it seems like they have taken the brunt of it in a lot of ways, because obviously, you know, they're very dependent upon the enrollment of students in the building. And obviously with COVID, a lot of families were A, reluctant to send their kids into a daycare setting, and B, because they were home themselves and perhaps, you know, struggling financially, that became an expense that they weren't able to budget, or an expense they didn't need to budget because they were working remotely from home as well. And then if you think about it, as the federal government has stepped up support, you know, EANS and those types of things, which we'll touch on a little bit later, our preschools and early childhood centers really have been kind of left out of most of that. You know, a lot of that, those allocations, those funds have gone elsewhere and haven't really been directed toward those programs. So a lot of struggles that make sense in there. How are they coping? How are they coming together and working beyond suspending services as some did?
Well, they continue to enact the guidance. And again, our early childhood programs work with state licensing agencies and work very closely with the health department. Licensure is a critical issue. Part of the challenge was enacting socially distant classrooms for essential workers, and which meant a reduction of the children they could serve. It required not mixing groups of students. So teachers were all learning to cope with routines of taking children down the hallway, or what time in the classroom looked like, pick up and drop off, parents visiting the classrooms. It was all very, very different. And so as we continue to open up, as we become more and more are vaccinated, I think we'll begin to see steps back to fuller classrooms.
Definitely pray that that's the direction that we're heading in, and hopefully as early as this August as we return back for this upcoming school year. We're talking with Dr. Becky Schmidt from the Lutheran School Ministry. The director of Lutheran School Ministries here on Lutheran Education Podcast. At this time, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back in a moment, but first, I want to give you a quick message from Lutheran Special Education Ministries. You are listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, sponsored by LSEM.
Lutheran Special Education Ministries is an organization committed to serving schools, churches, and families to advance the success of children who have learning needs. Our commitment to this mission began with the opening of the Lutheran School for the Deaf in Detroit. Over the years, our ministry has expanded, and today LSEM is proud to serve in Lutheran schools across the country. But as our ministry has grown, our commitment to helping students succeed academically in an environment where they can also grow spiritually is as strong as ever. So if your church or school is looking for professional development for your faculty, information to share with struggling families, or for a ministry partner to support an existing resource room or start a new one, LSEM is ready to help you meet your specialized learning goals. For more information about how LSEM can help you build brighter futures for your students, please contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. That's www.luthsped.org.
And welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. We're talking with Dr. Becky Schmidt, the director of LCMS School Ministry, here on the podcast. And you know how sometimes you're listening to talk radio, and when they come back in from a commercial segment, the guys on air say, "Oh, if you could only have heard the conversation we just had." We just had one of those moments, and well, you're not going to be able to get to hear it, but just it was good stuff. It was very good stuff that we talked about. Solved two or three of the world's problems in that break time there. But let's get back to the problems we are going to talk about here, or the issues we're going to talk about here on the podcast with Becky Schmidt. Becky, in looking at the statistics, again, with the difference of the dip in the number of schools that reported, not all the statistics can you really look at and have an apples to apples comparison, but a couple that really stood out to me, again, the number of schools that we have that are fewer than 200 students, 86% of our schools serve caseloads or student bodies that are fewer than 200. So again, we've talked before about the need to be not a synod of large schools, but a synod of excellent schools. And so how do you see us continuing to develop that excellence and show that excellence in spite of the fact that a lot of our school buildings just aren't really big?
Rich, our schools are independently owned and operated, and that gives our schools a great amount of leeway in terms of developing curriculum and policies and the programs that they offer. And so there's great value in our smaller schools. Mm-hmm. There's great value in our middle-sized schools. There's great value in our large schools. And when we keep our mission and purpose first and foremost, then the programs will follow. And we, regardless of the size of the school, every soul in our school is important. Every soul is cherished. And so we move ahead with that process. Now, we also have programs that will help support schools, and National Lutheran School Accreditation is one of those programs. So it's designed to serve schools of all sizes, from very small schools to very large schools, from early childhood through high school. And with that, a school can self-assess its strengths. It can build a school action plan. It's verified by a group of peers, and it sets a route of improvement for the next 5 years, and then the process repeats. And so this is really important when we look at the quality of schools.
And I can concur with you on that, Becky, because again, with LSEM, one of the really great things about our ministry, self-promotion here, sorry guys, but one of the great things about our ministry is you don't have to have a full-time program to be able to partner with us. Most of our programs are part-time, many of them less than half-time. But again, it's smaller schools that recognize that there's a need and they want to go that extra mile to support all of their learners. And again, that's a spirit that is just really great to see in these smaller schools, because they're not letting enrollment numbers drive them one way or the other. You know, they're not worried about, well, if we only had 200 kids, look at all we could do instead of just having 100 kids. But they're also not worried about, well, we can't offer ministry options, we can't offer educational opportunities because we're smaller. They're trying to find those ways of making it happen. And again, meeting the needs of the students that they have and sharing with them not only math and science and reading and social studies, but Christ, which is why we're doing all of this. You know, it's really a great thing to see the commitment that all of our schools have, again, whether it's a school of 1900 or a school of 19.
Absolutely. And very often, schools that are smaller in size are much more nimble than our large schools. And True. So when you have a project that you're rolling out or involving communication and structural changes and so forth, that is a complex process. But many of our smaller schools are able to implement changes much faster and can adapt much easier to the families they serve.
We've talked about early childhood studies, we've talked about K to eights. How are our high schools doing?
No, our high schools are doing well. And they also have been working with remote learning and all of the pieces that are involved with that. One of the things that we're doing with our high schools this year is that we're rewriting our National Lutheran School Accreditation Protocol to better serve high schools. So this is going to be an important piece as we move ahead in the accreditation process to be more meaningful for our high schools. We just recently also finished a joint venture with our Lutheran School Administrators Conference with our collaboration with Lutheran Education Association and also the Association of Lutheran Secondary Schools and School Ministry, which served our administrators from preschool all the way through high school. And of course, we were delighted that many of our we had representation from many of our Concordia universities as well.
And again, I had a chance to participate, listen on the conference, and great job, and great slate of speakers, lots of good information to be shared there. So if you registered for it and you haven't had a chance to listen to the recordings, definitely take the time to do that, because a lot of great leadership shared, a lot of great stuff. And again, kudos to you and everyone at LEA and ALSS for figuring out how to adapt on the fly. I mean, you guys had a few weeks, I mean, in essence, to swap it from an in-person conference in Florida to a virtual conference across the country. So again, kudos to you guys for making that adaptation and doing it so well, so quickly.
Well, and one of those things too, Rich, so I'm going to give a shout out to LSEM as well, that we know that Dr. Bratton was very willing and open to shifting to a pre-recorded presentation. These are not easy to do, and this really helped enhance the sectionals that our virtual participants could take part in. So we really appreciated every single speaker and presenter that was able to do that and fit that into really overflowing plates and schedules.
Isn't it interesting how educators and speakers, you know, put them in a room with 100 people, 500 people, 5,000 people, not a big deal. Put them in a room in their house with just a camera on them by themselves, and all of a sudden, this is really weird. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do here. So I imagine that's probably something that a lot of the speakers have had to adapt to over the year. But I know that I, for one, am excited to see that's going to lead to new opportunities for conferences as we move forward. You may be having a dual role. You bring more speakers into places because there can be some virtual opportunities as well for them. So again, lots of possibilities to look at in the future based out of the necessity of the last 13, 14 months.
Absolutely. And I think that if it could be said, that was one of the bright spots of the pandemic is that we were nudged, forced, inspired to look at alternative ways to deliver information. And certainly where it makes sense to have it to be virtually, we're going to continue with that process. And where it doesn't, we'll bring back the face-to-face. Yeah. But it really did open the doors for an interesting kind of reach in terms of our virtual connection, like our Zoom today. And we will keep many of the things that we have learned this past year.
I have to give credit to Stacey Heft because she's the one that said this. As we went through all of these changes that we had to make over the course of the last 14 months, the changes that were made had to happen immediately in terms of delivering instruction, communicating. And were these done during normal times, it would have taken 5 times as long, cost 10 times as much. We would have needed consultants to come in and guide us. It would have been a nightmare, but we had to do it and we had to do it now. So again, the silver lining, I guess, is as we see it there. So next question on the statistics, and then we'll move on to a couple other topics here as we wrap up with Dr. Becky Schmidt. Looking at the number of educators and the demographics there, again, this year, we're seeing that non-rostered educators are the majority, a small majority, but the majority nonetheless, 51% of our teachers are non-rostered. And again, this is out of necessity. You know, our Concordias are producing students who are coming out and those students are filling positions very quickly, but the needs just not being met by the numbers that are currently coming into it. What excites you about the non-rostered teachers that we have and the opportunities that they're bringing to our schools? Because again, it's easy for me to say, hey, what concerns you about this? But what excites you about having this new group of teachers coming into our schools? What are they bringing to our schools?
You know, I love that question, Rich, because I was one of those teachers so many years ago. And my experience was I did not have the opportunity to be Synod trained when I graduated from college. And I served in a Lutheran school teaching kindergarten and was surrounded by this wonderful community of staff and church and it was through that experience that shaped my development. And so we have this opportunity again, and looking at programs like Colloquy, looking at alternative ways to find workers. And really the important part is what happens after they're hired or contracted. And so the school that is in church that is intentional in surrounding these newer teachers with acceptance, encouragement, training, Bible study, funding colloquy, and walking with them and cheering them on is really critical. And then you have someone for life, and what a blessing that is, and what a blessing that's been in my life, life-changing, and I know it can be done. Yep.
It's always interesting to me, again, as we hire at LSCM, because a lot of the part-time folks that we hire are retired teachers who they're at that point in their career where they're no longer wanting the public school scene and the public school paperwork and those types of things, but they're not done teaching. And so they come into our settings, and when we start talking to them about modeling their faith and how they live that out in the classroom, many of these teachers, it's kind of a two-step process. The first is, well, I don't really know how to answer that question because I've never been able to do this. In fact, I've been told pretty clearly, I can't do this. So they pause, but then after that pause is over and they start to really think about how they can take the faith that's within them and share it as a part of their work, you can just hear the excitement in their voice as they really open up their minds to that thought for the first time. And they have in many cases gone on to be some of the strongest teachers that we've had in our ministry, you know, because it's something that they appreciate because they've had a long opportunity to have to keep that stifled, and to be able to share that now really excites them, and it allows them to really be an asset to the school in that regard. I think there's another interesting connection that comes with that too, is again, we also look at the number of our students who are enrolled in schools that come from households where they're not church attenders or not Lutheran. And having teachers who are from a similar background, perhaps there's a way that those teachers and students can relate and kind of, you know, understand amongst each other, hey, it's okay for us not have all of the answers. It's okay for us to not know all of the different traditions and the different practices. We can learn them together. And as we learn them together and grow to understand and appreciate them, there's growing. So there could be some safety for many of our students who we're also evangelizing to as a part of this process. What are your thoughts on that as we continue to use our schools as an evangelism tool to families and students that otherwise wouldn't have that opportunity?
Absolutely, Rich. You're spot on in terms of serving families of different faiths, serving families from the community. And when families visit our school, whether it's a virtual tour or coming on site, if that's possible, they're wondering, how will I fit in? How will I belong? Will my child have friends here? Will I be respected? Will I have friends here? And so all of those questions are happening in the background. And our job as staff, as the principal in that first interaction, that 5 seconds where you make your first impression is, yes, this is the place for you. And then and building that culture among your staff to provide a surrounding safety net, so to speak, all the while helping them to understand and become a part of that school community.
So it's not a question of, well, we're going to dismiss it or going to diminish the role. It's a matter of recognizing everyone that walks through the door is coming in at perhaps a different starting point. And we're going to be inclusive of that and welcoming to those folks as we help them to better understand and to learn and to grow, so they can have, again, that opportunity to let the Holy Spirit work in them and to come to the saving knowledge of Christ.
Absolutely. It is a journey, and it's not a one-step process. And that's the beauty of schools, I think. We can, in our elementary schools, we have them for 9 years. If they want to high school, we have them for 13 years. In our early childhood, which is the very best place, because our connection with families is hand-to-hand, from your hand to my hand, and entrusting that child. So you have two or three sentences of conversation every day with a family, building those connections and being there and being ready, seizing the opportunity when families may need help or support. And it's just being attentive and open for ministry.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Becky Schmidt, director of LCMS School Ministry, here on the podcast. Changing topics entirely now. Over the last few months, you'd have to be living under a rock to have not heard EANS, the Emergency Assistance for Non-Public Schools Act. In fact, it was so good, they've started coming out with a sequel, EANS 2. So we'll see if it's as good as the Star Wars trilogy or whatnot. But all of these programs now that are being offered to our schools to provide funding to help deal with schools and the hardships that come from the pandemic. So don't want to get too much into the nuts and the bolts of the process and how it works, but talk to me a little bit about some of the schools and the areas that you've spoken with folks. How are people using their funds? What sorts of excitement are you seeing? Or are there concerns that schools are having with that? Just in general, what's the landscape of EANS as you see it in our private schools, and how are schools making the most of it?
Well, Rich, we're talking about a much broader consideration for EANS. We've had the Payroll Protection Program through the CARES Act, and any number of these federal and state programs that have been designed to help non-public schools. And really, this varies state by state, and very important to be connected to the education executive serving in the school's district who can help a school navigate all the application process and what the conditions are and so forth. So really, just very thankful for our education executives that have worked tirelessly in this process. And then state by state, we have, in many states, schools have a good relationship with their public school district. Where that's happening, it's a much easier process when these funds are overseen by these district areas. So it's important that in your state that you connect with the agency that is overseeing the disbursement of those funds, and it varies everywhere.
So safe to say, if principals are listening to this and they're unsure or unclear on certain things, reach out to the district ed exec, reach out to the non-public schools agency within your state, reach out to the SEA, the ombudsman within your state, if your state is blessed to have one of those. And then also perhaps just reach out to other principals, talk to some of your colleagues to see who's learned what, and share information as the application processes open up and as we start to see people, you know, allocating those funds for certain things. Just a great opportunity for administrators to communicate with one another to find out, hey, what are you doing? What's working? Those types of things.
This is also, you bring up a great point. This has also been a strength of our school ministry office in terms of LuthEd. And on Facebook, we have the hashtag LuthEd website with over 6,000 educators that are serving on this. And this is a place to post a question. You can expect 20 to 25 responses, and really you're just only a posting away for getting great information on any number of topics that you have questions about as we continue to move through this year.
Excellent. Again, Becky, we can't thank you enough for taking the time and for sharing some of these thoughts. Again, it's an exciting time to be working in Lutheran schools. In spite of the challenges, God still continues to present opportunities for our schools. So as we wrap up here, let me just do this. Let me just give you the floor. So if you want to say anything to any of our listeners out here on the podcast, any message that you would want to share to them as they head into this final stretch of this school year and look back on what they've been able to accomplish over the last 13, 14 months. What would you say to them as we close?
Well, thanks, Rich. I really appreciate that. We've talked to so many administrators at serving in schools, and we've talked to families about this, and we don't often hear that side of the story. We have plenty of statistics, and those are very important. They will drive our decision making in the future. But when I talked to a principal, she responded that her school has been able to provide in-person classes for the 2021 school year to be open and remain open. They reduced class sizes, planned for social distancing, restricted visitors, and all the while serving with a great staff. They were exhausted, but they came back and said, but we have so many blessings in this strange and crazy year. Everyone is working together. Now, a parent in this group sent a note and said, our children have been blessed to be in person at school before the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and my wife and I felt very fortunate that our children were enrolled in a Lutheran school. The biblical and moral teachings, academics, and top-notch instruction is life-changing for our children, especially in today's world. After the COVID-19 pandemic set in, the impact that our Lutheran school is having on our children is so much more pronounced. I believe the positive impacts of their Lutheran education will be shown in the years to come. And so, in closing, the principal responds, "We keep God and our students first. The bond with our students is so strong. We hope this continues for many years to come." And back to our theme, "Even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many," from Matthew 20, 28.
Becky, again, thank you so very much. Cannot appreciate enough the work that you are doing. And again, extend our thanks to Matthew and to Kristen as well for everything that you guys are doing in St. Louis and around the world to support our Lutheran schools. We couldn't do it without you guys, and we are so appreciative of everything you provide for us.
Thank you, Rich. It's always a joy to spend time on this podcast.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone who's listening today on the podcast. We appreciate your listening ship. I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up. We'll go with it. We appreciate you tuning in and sharing the information about the podcast. So thank you for all that. I also want to give thanks to our producer extraordinaire, Dave Klonke. He's the guy behind the microphone here. Never get to see him, but does a great job of producing this for us. So thank you to Dave as well. Blessings on the rest of your school years. And we look forward to hearing back to you again, or getting back to you again here, as we come out with our next Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. To hear future episodes, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Yes, I pray.